Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, it's going to be Richard and Marcy, and actually we've got two open lines at this point, so grab one of them while I say good morning, Richard.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir.
I got a question. I got a problem with grub worms, and I mean, they everywhere. They in my yard, they in my flower beds, they in my garden. I was just wondering the best way to get rid of them.
Well, first of all, they are not a problem now. They are going to become an issue of sorts because the grub worms that you're finding now, and we're talking these little things now, they're probably, what, close to 3/4 of an inch to an inch long and maybe almost as big around as a pencil?
Yeah, some of them are bigger than that, but most of them are about that size.
Well, these guys have pretty much grown to full size, and they're just waiting for the soil to warm up to the point that they can turn into June bugs, go fly around and lay a bunch of eggs. It's not the big grub worms that are so damaging to our plants. It's the little bitty, what we call first and second larval instars, that do the most damage to the plants. And I haven't seen any sign of those yet. I haven't seen any June bugs yet. I think that's one thing about this cool weather we're having this month. It is going to delay the flight of the June bugs a little bit. So I guess my first message is don't go overboard worrying about it, because those are not the grubs that are really going to do all the damage. It would be nice to kill as many of them as possible, just because that's going to mean fewer June bugs to get out and lay the eggs. But this is not something you have to do in, you know, the next 30 minutes. What I would do is go to a good nursery that carries live beneficial nematodes and simply put those things out. You'll be controlling fire ants, fleas, grub worms, wireworms. You'll be controlling a lot of different problematic organisms in the soil. And it will take much longer. Your little those little first and second larval instars, the ones that do all the damage, the nematodes kill those in a matter of hours. These big grub worms, it may take 2 or 3 weeks before the nematodes actually totally kill them, but they will render them incapable of turning into June bugs. They'll become, so to speak, totally neutered and harmless by putting out the beneficial nematodes. So that's what I would do. Sometime in the next week, 10 days, 2 weeks, go to a good nursery, get some live beneficial nematodes, and put them out to control the grubs. And don't worry if they don't just all seem to be dying overnight. They've been neutered, so to speak, and they're not going to be that much of a problem. Now, do keep an eye out for the June bugs. When you start seeing a lot of June bugs, when you start seeing them flying that can happen any time between April and September. But when you start seeing June bugs, you're probably going to want to make another application of beneficial nematodes. But those things aren't expensive. And like I say, you're also controlling fleas and other critters at this point. But the most important thing is they are not going to just devastate your new spring crops and things like that, because the ones that you see now have done pretty much all the eating they're going to do, so they're not really going to go after any of your plants.
Okay, well, thank you on that. And I got one more quick question.
Yes, sir.
I have rabbits, and can you overdo rabbit manure like in your gardens?
It would be hard. Rabbits, what do you feed your rabbits? You feed them an alfalfa-based food of some sort? Yeah. See, this is what makes rabbit manure so great, is there's so much good stuff in the alfalfa. That's why it's so good for the rabbits. But it really produces a top-quality manure, but it's not a really hot manure. You know, poultry litter manures, chicken litter manure and things like that, that stuff, if you don't compost it, certainly has a potential to burn. But I'm just really not worried. I'm not sure that I would plant, you know, things in just nothing but rabbit manure, but it's not hot enough that I think you're likely to see any damage whatsoever. I think you're very fortunate to have it, because it is just one of the best nutrient materials out there. The nutrients are in a form that's really good for the soil, really good for the earthworms and all the things that keep our soils loose and open. So I wouldn't worry about using too much of it. I just don't think that's going to be a problem.
Okay, that's all I've got. Thanks a lot.
Well, you get out and enjoy this weekend, and have a happy St. Patty's Day tomorrow.
Y'all too.
All right, Richard. Thank you so much. And let's see. I'm going to go next and talk to Marcy. Good morning, Marcy.
Good morning. I have a question about raised beds. I have a brand new house that had Bermuda grass, and I had some raised beds made. And anytime I do that, it seems like the landscaper or yard man, he always wants to put in that fabric, that
right.
landscape fabric.
Yep.
And I usually somehow just get talked into it, but it drives me crazy because now, and I told him over and over, if I want to plant anything, you know, I'm a real gardener. I want the flower beds done, but I want to also be able to work in my garden.
Sure.
And so what do you do then? Do you just have to cut it? To plant something?
Yeah, it's terrible stuff. I mean,
I know.
The only time I put it down is when I want to kill what's underneath it. I use it, I'll roll it out and leave it for 1 year. You know, on a row where I'm expanding my vegetable garden or something, and I will actually cut holes in it and plant through mm-hmm. that. But mm-hmm. man, when that year is gone, I rip it up and, well, I don't throw it away. I roll it up and use it again if I want to expand a little bit further. But anywhere you can, number one, you know, grow a little backbone and say, hey, if you want to be my gardener, you're going to stop using this stuff because there are a bunch more just like you out there that like my money. And just, it just doesn't work. That's the other bottom line to it. You know, I have, if you were to look around my vegetable garden, which, golly, I'm behind in getting stuff done this year, but around the whole outer edge of it, I have a 2.5 foot wide strip of the weed block just to try to keep things from growing in from outside the garden, trying to get into my wonderful garden soil. I can't use the words I'd like to on the air, but that Bermuda grass grows over the top of the weed block. It grows under the weed block. That's the big joke. If Bermuda's an issue, the blasted weed block doesn't even start to stop it, and it's mm-hmm. killing your soil. It's just,
I know.
You know, and the life underneath. So rip it out everywhere you can. If there are any places that you can't, dig the biggest holes, punch the biggest holes through it that you can. But I just... unless you're trying to sterilize the soil. And the other thing I'll tell you about it too is that you'll get dust and things collecting on top of it, and then you'll have one of the biggest weed problems you've ever seen. You can put the weed fabric down, you can put rock on top of it, and all of a sudden you'll have weeds growing in your rocks. I'd laugh. There's a subdivision up the way from where I live, and I used to go up and, you know, visit with some friends up there that, and I passed a yard going into Diamond Ridge that where the guy put plastic grass in the front yard. He had the biggest weed crop I had ever seen growing up out of his plastic grass because it just doesn't work. The dust blows in. The seeds blow in. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. I hate weed block. And I think it should be done away with.
He's coming by today. Should I ask him to use his knife and cut out some holes so I can plant stuff? Or
if you think you can trust him to actually do it,
I'll watch him do it.
I think that'd be the thing I do.
Okay. I'm gonna ask him to do that because I mean, it's just ridiculous. I tried to plant stuff yesterday and it's just so frustrating. And
Yeah. It's amazing how it can stop your garden spade, but it doesn't stop the weeds. Yeah, and the worst thing too, Marcy, of course, is it really interferes with water absorption, and most importantly, it interferes with oxygen absorption into the soil, and those are two things that you really, really need if you're going to grow good plants. So,
Okay.
Yeah, just number one, tell him to cut the biggest holes in it he can, and tell him that if you ever see a roll of it on his truck when he's near your property, he's going to be looking for a new job.
Okay. All right, will do. Thank you.
You are sure welcome, and you have a wonderful weekend.
Okay.
Thanks, Farsi. Bye. All right, let's get to these phone lines. It's going to be James and Clint, and James is up first. Good morning, James.
Morning, Bob. How you doing?
Oh, you know, it's just another nice, chilly spring day, but it's every day we're just one day closer to our real spring weather, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, sir. I threw another log in my cedar eater over here and got the stove cranked up. Nice and warm in here.
Yes, sir. I'll bet it is. It's pretty warm in the studio. But at least it's not windy today. At least it wasn't when I came into the studio. That's the thing. Past couple of days, it's just been so windy. And that wind chill's what gets you. The actual temperature isn't that bad.
Boy, ain't that the truth. The question was, if you organic guys are using vinegar for herbicides, where are you putting it in the Garrett juice?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. In the Garrett juice, we are using apple cider vinegar, which is not nearly as caustic as the chemically derived vinegar that we usually use as a weed killer. For weed killing purposes, we're using it virtually straight. I mean, we're adding a little bit of orange oil to it, and we're not diluting it down with water whatsoever. In the Garrett juice, it is very, very dilute. And it's the acetates, which is, vinegar is acetic acid, and it's some of those acetate radicals that actually do the plant killing. You simply don't have nearly as much of that in apple cider vinegar to start out with, and then you've got it diluted down to the point that the benefits greatly outweigh any minor damage that it does.
And the benefits are?
The benefits are the slight acidifying effect that you get. And, of course, as we make things slightly more acid, we make them more than we make a lot of, especially the metallic nutrients and things, a lot more available to the plants. It seems to have something to do with helping seeds to sprout. And I can't really tell you all the different things. Maybe that'd be a good thing for me to put on the log to ask Howard about, and just all the benefits of having the vinegar in the Garrett juice. So I'll make it a point to ask him, but those are just a few of the benefits.
That's what I told him. It's when you acidify the solution, it just makes it more plant available.
Yeah. It makes things more bioavailable, so to speak, but it somehow breaks down. Mother Nature protects those seeds. She didn't want them trying to sprout until they have a reasonable chance of growing and surviving. And it's been my experience that Garrett juice, just a very brief soak in very dilute Garrett juice, really speeds up germination and increases the percentage of those seeds that germinate well.
Yeah, that was kind of I'm making some Garrett juice to soak some seeds in. And Tatuma squash, right, which is actually a pumpkin.
Right. Right.
Hope I get some pretty good germination. The question I had last week for you was, a summer cover crop for the tomato hoop house, and you mentioned green beans. So I took that information, and I found out that the kidney bean has got a 24-inch taproot and a 3-foot wide spread on it. So we decided to try some cannelloni or cannellate. How do you say those?
Cannelloni is what I say, but I'm no linguist. I'm not sure, but I think that's how they pronounce it.
Going to plant them on 1-foot spacings and let them run wild and just harvest them for dried beans and see how that worked. The information I got from the guy that grows them said instead of pulling the plants when you're finished with them, just cut them off at the soil surface and leave the roots in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would do that too. And there's another benefit to that too, because your little mycorrhizal fungi and things like that that also do very good things in the soil for all your plants. If you just rip a living plant out of the soil, you're destroying a lot of the mycorrhizae that are down there. When you cut a plant off and the bottom of it begins to die, your mycorrhizal fungi respond by going into sort of a semi-dormant state in the soil, waiting for the next crop to come in so that they can colonize the root system. So there are a lot of reasons that I think you're better off to cut those off than to try to pull them up.
I was talking to Malcolm, and he was using, in the old days, he was using Roundup on Bermuda grass. Well, Bermuda grass and Johnson grass.
Right.
And he would kill the Johnson grass, and he told me that after he'd dig up the dead roots of the Johnson grass, it was just covered with earthworms. They were feasting on those dead roots.
Right.
So that was the plan to feed the earthworms in the raised beds in the hoof house. Leaving the roots in the ground.
I think it's going to work, and I think it's just every year you're going to find out that that it just gets better and better. Your soil's just constantly being improved.
Now you mentioned mycorrhizae. I've been watering the tomatoes in the hoop house, and everywhere I water, I got a proliferation of toadstools or mushrooms, or I don't know how to identify them. What's going on, man?
Well, you know, what you see, what we call toadstools, mushrooms, whatever you want to call them, they are the fruiting body. I mean, fungi don't bloom. Fungi reproduce by spores, at least the multi-cell ones reproduce by spores. And so you've got this fungus that is just has its body, so to speak, is called a mycelium. Boy, you're taking me a long way back in my plant morphology days. But it's got this, its body, so to speak, is growing all through the soil. And when it decides that it wants to reproduce, it makes this structure that comes up on top of the soil, which is what makes all the spores, which is how the fungus reproduces. And that's what your mushroom cap, that's what your toadstool cap is simply a reproductive body. And if you've ever, you know, taken and let a toadstool top dry, put it on a piece of white paper, you'll see who knows how many thousands or millions of those little spores are just as fine as dust. You'll have a pattern on the paper underneath it from all the spores that are falling out from in between those gills on the top. So what you're looking at is just the reproducing body of the fungus, and what that's telling you is that you've got a lot of great organic material in the soil. You take old poor nutrient poor soils, you never see mushrooms or toadstools coming up out of that. But a lot of folks see them in their yard, for instance, where, you know, tree roots underneath the ground are decomposing, and they're one of the fungi that helps with breaking those down. When you start seeing fungus, when you start seeing mushroom caps and things like that, that's just telling you you got lots of organic material in the soil, and it's not a bad thing.
Oh, good news. All right, that sounds great. Excuse me. Thanks for answering my questions.
You know, it's always a pleasure visiting, James. Get out and have a wonderful weekend, and I'll look forward to our next visit.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Okay, let's see. I'm going to go ahead and talk to Clint. Good morning, Clint.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you this morning?
Good. Last week you mentioned about I could spray my pomegranate down with cornmeal tea. Is popcorn just as good as using, you know, granite for that?
Any kind of corn works. It's not, you know, the corn itself. It's this beneficial fungus called Trichoderma. And what you want is, you know, is just a whole corn kernel. You don't want any of this cornmeal stuff that's had all the good stuff polished off of it, which is what the cornmeal they sell in the store for the most part is, unless you're buying what's called whole ground cornmeal. You're getting a processed product that doesn't grow the trichoderma well, but just any kind of corn that's being ground up, whether it's popcorn, field corn, sweet corn, any of those things should grow the good trichoderma, and that's what you're trying to get out of your cornmeal tea.
And what was the amount for the tea again?
It depends on how much you're making. A 5-gallon bucket, I'd put probably about a cup of cornmeal in there. And if you're going to be spraying it, I would put that cornmeal in an old sock or get your girlfriend to give you, you know, an old pair of pantyhose or something like that, because that way you don't have to strain it. It will still grow that trichoderma just fine, but then you can just pull the sock or whatever out and dispose of it. If you dump your cornmeal straight in the water, then you're probably going to have to pour it through a paint strainer bag or something like that so that it doesn't clog up your sprayer.
And how long is that tea good for?
What you're making is actually a leachate rather than a tea. It's probably good for 24 to 48 hours, but I'd make it fresh every time you want to do it.
Do that. Okay. Yeah. And that's, spraying that once the blooms, go away. And
yeah. Yeah. As soon as your fruit has started to form, you know, it's impossible to tell you how often to do it because when we have cloudy, rainy weather, plants are a lot more susceptible to damage from different fungi than when we have drier, windier weather. And, man, anybody trying to predict weather these days has to be a little bit crazy. And so if we have a lot of moist, overcast weather, then I'd be spraying my cornmeal tea a little bit more often. If we have bright, sunny days, it's not going to be nearly as critical.
And speaking of prediction of rain, what was the Farmer's Almanac saying for this summer?
I haven't read the Farmer's Almanac for this summer. We'll have to find somebody who has, but I'm afraid I haven't reviewed that. So you can check it out, or I'll find somebody who has.
All right, well, I appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure, Clint. Appreciate the call this morning. Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
All right.
All right, let's get back to gardening. We're going to talk to David and then Ann and then you. Good morning, David.
Good morning. How are we, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well. It's going to be a great day. Going to have a fun day. Teach a seminar on all about color in the landscape this morning. And I don't know, I get up looking forward to the day, and it's going to be a good weekend.
That'll work.
How about you?
Trying to do a little gardening, too. Hope the ground dries up a little bit.
But don't worry. We didn't get enough rain to put much moisture in the soil. You're gonna get down about a quarter of an inch. You're going to find that soil's plenty dry for you to garden in.
Very good. All right, question of the day is the diesel molasses ratio for mesquite or weesach. Would that either one, will that cure my problem?
Well, it's, you know, it's not organic, but it sure beats these toxic herbicides, and the diesel kills, the molasses cleans it up. I do a 50-50 mix. You might be able to vary that a little one way or another and be successful, but I probably overdo it on the wanting to clean it up end of it, and that's the purpose of the molasses in there. So I just do a 50-50 mix. Now, it doesn't go into solution, so to speak. You got to keep shaking it, or I just keep a stick in that can and just stir it up real good before I pour it on, because they don't want to blend together. But you're killing with the diesel. You're cleaning up the toxic stuff the diesel leaves behind with your molasses.
And is there, like, a large tree versus something that has been cut and kind of trying to grow back, you know, like a gallon, or do I?
That probably gets a little expensive and is probably a lot more than you need. Now, if you had a big stump, yeah, maybe a couple of quarts, you know, a smaller stump, maybe a couple of cups would be enough. You just want to wet the stump and the soil immediately around it pretty well, and that's just going to depend on how big the tree was to begin with.
And do you see, let's say, your wrist size? I mean, do you see, will it be next year before it starts to defoliate or decline?
Well, I cut it off at ground level, and I treat the stump. I don't treat the, you know, a growing tree. I'm not sure how well that would work. I'm going to, you know, I've got literally, I'm going along with my chainsaw. I'm cutting it off, throwing the thorny stuff aside, and then dumping a little bit of the mix over the stump.
Gotcha.
And okay. Then it normally just doesn't come back out.
That'll work. That was my big problem.
Well, it's... It's a lot of work, but let me tell you what. And, you know, if you look at your weed killers like Remedy and things like that, and that stuff can move hundreds of feet and kill trees that you had no intention of killing. But if you look, they're telling you to add diesel to it. And once again, I think it's probably diesel's doing as much good as the other. And they just spread so widely. The thing about your diesel molasses mix, it's not going anywhere. It's just going to kill that one area where you're pouring it on.
Okay. One more question. Do we have time?
Yes, sir.
I said mulch. What I've got an old farmhouse, basically all wood. Putting mulch around azaleas, around the house, does that invite termites and stuff?
Not any more than the wood already is. You know, termites live to decompose wood. That's what they do in life. And putting the mulch around, you could easily have some termites in the mulch, but you probably would have them anyway. If you put out your beneficial nematodes now and then, they'll totally keep them under control. I think it's a good idea to do anyway.
At your box store, the red, the black, the colored, it's mulch is mulch, correct?
Well, I don't like the dyed stuff because I don't like the toxic stuff that's in those dyes. If that's your best source, yeah, but if you live in Kendall County, you know, you tip the guy at the brush dump $5 and he'll load as much as you can carry onto your pickup truck. I know Comal County does the same thing. If you know a tree trimmer, just tell him, because, you know, it's always been funny to me. Your tree trimmer's got all these chips he needs to get rid of. They actually charge him to take them and dump them at a company that's going to then turn around and turn it into compost and sell it. I find that very funny. If you know anybody in the tree trimming business, tell them next time he's got a load of chips, you know, come dump it in your yard and you'll have a 5-year supply.
Well, we have, I live in Fayette County and they have that. It's $5 for a big scoop.
That's better stuff than you're going to buy in the store. So, and if you're in the country, you either have a pickup or you have one available to you. That's what I'd be using.
That's correct. Okay, Bob, I do appreciate it.
I appreciate your call, David. Have a great weekend, and thank you so much.
You too, sir.
And thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All right, it's Ann's turn next. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. I just have a real quick question. I listen to you every Saturday.
I appreciate that.
Gung-ho about working in there, getting their yards ready. How is it too early yet to trim down lantana to the ground, the dead stuff?
Well, anything that's frozen, that's like cutting your hair or your fingernails. The plant didn't even know it's gone. I trimmed mine this past week. I think it's a fine time to be cutting back your lantana. I cut it down to maybe an inch tall. I wouldn't be cutting it all the way to the ground, but cut it down to an inch or two tall. Yeah, that'd be a great activity for a nice morning out there.
For me. No, we're having a garage sale this morning, so it's going to have to wait. But I still have some that's blooming, like the smaller variety.
Well, it's a totally different species. There's a trailing purple and a trailing white. Those don't have
to be
trimmed. Yeah, those don't have to be trimmed back at all unless you're getting out of hand.
They're still blooming.
Yeah, okay. They bloom almost year round. They don't bloom.
Yeah.
Your other varieties, your brighter varieties, tend to bloom in the summer only.
Mm-hmm.
Your lavender and white trailing forms of lantana, and this one thing I need to talk about in my seminar this morning. Thank you for reminding me. They bloom more heavily in the spring and fall. And not as much, but those things, I mean, you can have flowers on those 12 months out of the year. So the only
purple do.
Yeah, I would only trim it if it's getting out of hand. Otherwise, I wouldn't even touch it with pruning shears.
Oh, good, because the deer don't eat those, so.
No, if you have a reasonable number of deer, they totally leave them alone. There are a lot of things to recommend lantanas. And the other thing about that purple form is it'll grow in partial shade, where your more brightly colored forms pretty much have to have full sun. So it's a great plant.
Yeah, they grow in front of my house, and which gets sun and shade. So, yeah, they're really good. All right, that takes care of my question. Thank you.
Well, hope your garage sales is successful this morning, and you have a great weekend.
So do we. All righty.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye. All right. Oh, it's just going to be a wonderful weekend, and I always enjoy talking to Faye. Good morning, Faye. How's everything over in your part of the state?
Well, it's pretty nice springtime. We're still wet over here.
Well, hopefully you're not saturated. You have, let's just call it, adequate moisture at this point.
Well, and saturated might be a little closer. We're still just after the hurricane and additional rain, we're still just soaked. So I'm working around that a little bit, which brings me to the questions. We have these out in the acreage there, we have these little insects that are, looking them up, it looks like they could be called midges.
Yeah.
But they are in my ears, in my eyes, and out in my hair. And is there a remedy for that?
Oh, man. I would try cedar oil. Okay. Midges are, oh, golly, they're real weird little creatures, and they can be damaging to crops as well. It's just annoying. But I think you would find that just a cedar oil spray is very, very repellent to them. I know it works well on mites like the chiggers and things like that, so I think it is probably going to work well on them. But I would look for one of the cedar oil sprays would be where I would start.
Okay, and once it dries up, do they kind of go away, or they just tear permanently?
I think at least for the most part, they will go away. They're one of those little creatures that when the conditions are right, their numbers just explode. But in a more typical year, Mother Nature has it balanced out where there are enough other things that go after them where their reproduction slows down. So, you know, I just hate to use the word normal when I talk about anything related to weather. But in your area, I doubt that they are going to be a problem once we move beyond this this period where we have been had more rainfall than is at all typical over a much more prolonged period. The other thing about this crazy spring, so to speak, is just we haven't had any sunshine. That's probably had more effect on odd stuff happening in the environment than anything else. It's just the number of sunny days we've had so far in 2019 is very limited, and that's what's keeping things from drying out. That's what's slowing down a lot of plants coming out. It's just we need more sunshine, and then everything gets better.
Well, and that's right. It has not been sunny.
Yeah,
for sure has not been. Well, thank you. I'll get a hold of some of that oil. I have another a friend of mine up in Fort Worth has had a pear tree that in the storm they had, I guess, several days back, got broken and really killed. So is a magnolia something that could grow in that same spot happily, or a small magnolia?
And where is this now?
In Fort Worth.
If they're in an area with deep soil, magnolias will do okay. Fort Worth doesn't have nearly as much rock as we do here in San Antonio. They have a more alkaline soil, which magnolias don't really like. But I go with the little gem. I keep it heavily mulched, and it should be fine.